This is the best of the Adam Gold Show podcast, part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network, brought to you by Capital Financial Advisory Group. Get your total retirement income plan by texting Adam to 21000.
All right, let's talk.
Enjoy the best of today's show. Here's Adam Gold.
We have to get to all of them. Quick beverage, and we're in our brand new studio. Does it look nice?
It does look good.
You look good on TV?
It does. Actually, I need to switch the camera and give you a better angle.
A better angle?
Yeah, there we go. There we go. Now you're...
Is that a good angle?
Oh, we're cooking with gas now.
Oh, excellent. All right, let's get right to it. What I forgot to mention? Shouts to my wife, who not only added mac and cheese to the Thanksgiving table that we didn't need another dish, but she also thought we needed a chocolate chess pie.
Ah, yes.
Right? We already have apple pie and pumpkin pie. So, and that's on top of the banana bread she makes every year.
Yeah.
So she added a chocolate chess pie to the mix.
Speaking of which, we didn't get to the chocolate mousse tuxedo cake until last night from Costco.
Right.
Let me just tell you.
Yeah.
It's legit.
Of course.
It's legit.
Yeah.
I also had, over the weekend, a cheesecake from Costco.
Uh-huh.
Also legit.
I was not physically prepared for Thanksgiving.
We didn't. I mean, we were too full to eat dessert on Thanksgiving.
I didn't either.
Passed it up. It got to it last night, finally. It was really good.
All right. Real quick before we get to football. Canes lost to Washington yesterday, and we'll get to the particulars of the game later on. But you remember last Monday, we found out that Ethan Bear, defenseman, was entering COVID protocols. Hurricanes were in San Jose getting ready to play the Sharks that night. That was the 10:30 game of the trip. Well, we all knew it was a matter of time before others were positive. Brett Pesce, Tony DeAngelo, today. There will be more. There will be.
How could there not be?
Right. There will be more because it hit at the worst possible time for Carolina, because when you're on the road, you're around each other constantly. Nobody's going home to your respective houses. Everybody's together all the time. You're riding buses together. You're on a plane together. You're in you're eating in one giant room together. So it's going to happen. There are going to be more players hit. So, Bear, because of NHL protocols, Bear can't leave San Jose until Wednesday. 10-day, automatic 10-day isolation, vaccinated or otherwise. Everybody. So he can't even leave San Jose until Wednesday. He's been in the hotel room for 10 days. What an existence that is. He conceivably could return Thursday when Carolina hosts Buffalo. But Carolina's got a Western Canada trip coming after they play Ottawa Saturday night. They leave for, I think it's Winnipeg, is the first stop on their Western. You know, Winnipeg, Calgary, Vancouver, and Edmonton in whatever order, and then back to Minnesota. So, Bear could come back, but Pesce and DeAngelo aren't going to make that trip. And whoever is next, however many players there are, aren't going to make that trip. I wonder if Carolina will make that trip. The NHL shut down. Was it Ottawa and the Islanders? They've already shut down. Ottawa had three games postponed. The Islanders had their game against the Rangers postponed. Mm-hmm. I think there are others coming. I wouldn't be shocked if the Hurricanes were grounded for 10 days. I really wouldn't. I wouldn't be surprised if that's the case, which means, boy, the schedule's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
Coming up.
Especially with the Olympic break for 3 weeks coming up in February.
February is off.
Right.
Yeah, it is absolutely going to be awesome. So yesterday's loss to the Capitals is going to pale in comparison to what's coming next.
Not to make too much light of this, but what would you do if you were stuck in a hotel room for 10 days? Like, imagine that bill.
Oh,
because I would wear out the minibar and I would order every movie possible. And it would just be, I mean, it would be terrible.
Yeah.
But
I actually asked the question to somebody who might know. I just said, what's the room service bill?
Right. Oh, I would be crushing room service. I would be coming back to practice a complete just terrible. I'd be terrible.
Oh, man.
I mean, but, what are you supposed to do? You going to run in place?
But you know Billy Burniston.
Do squats?
You know they sent, like, workout bands up to the hotel room.
I mean, you'd have to. You'd have to do something.
Yeah. Oh,
I mean, are you even allowed to go? You're not allowed to go? Are you even allowed to go into the gym or anywhere?
I believe you're isolated in the room.
Into the room.
In the room. Can't leave the room for 10 days.
What, do they slide the meal under the door?
I guess. Leave the cart outside. You open your door. You grab it and you quickly put it in a bubble. Anyway, it's hurricanes in relatively bad shape. It will be relatively bad shape. All right, we have just a couple of seconds here. We're going to talk about this with Will Brinson. And it's hard to not focus this on Cam Newton, right? It's really hard to look at what the Panthers did in Miami and not think that this is about Cam Newton. But I think it's about way more than Cam Newton, and I am not.
Agree.
I am not in any way trying to protect Cam. Cam was awful. Even the play that everybody loved, because we were at the hockey game last night, so I didn't see the game live. I watched the game after the Packers and Rams were over.
Oh, I didn't even watch that. I did watch it after. Was that the 4 o'clock game?
Yeah.
Yeah, so
when the Packers and Rams
too.
Ended, that's when I turned on the rolled the Panthers Dolphins game.
Yes, same.
So, but my Twitter timeline exploded when Cam hit DJ Moore for the 64-yard pass. Oh, who says he doesn't have arm strength, baby? I saw it. I saw all of it. I'm like, oh, cool. Well, Cam completed a deep ball. I can't wait to see it. Yeah, it's kind of underthrown. Should have been a touchdown.
It was underthrown.
Right, regardless, he completed a deep ball. He threw the ball down the field. The ball probably traveled like 45, 50 yards in the air. All right, that's good. But the rest of it, oh my gosh, it was bad. It was terrible. But here's my overarching point about it. I really need to know if Matt Rhule and Joe Brady watch tape. Because you couldn't have watched the game against Washington and thought that it was a good idea to throw the ball even as many times as you run it. They should be a 60-40 run-pass split. Run more than you pass. And it should not be dictated by the score. And frankly, the first half was an embarrassment to me. Why aren't you running the ball? Cam Newton is a good runner, a great runner. Christian McCaffrey, before he rolled his ankle again, is a great runner. Man, zone read the Miami Dolphins to death. Nothing. They just dropped back and threw it on first down of the game. Are you kidding me? And then, of course, we're going to talk about this with Will Brinson in a matter of seconds. State Carolina, that game was just that game was high. An absolute, I mean, it was like magic mushrooms that game. Everything. I know State won, but I don't know how, if you're a State fan, other than the fact that you won that game. I'm not sure how you think any differently about anything based on just winning the game. Because, I mean, I didn't understand why you threw the ball as much as you did when you were running it effectively. It actually showed up with a running game. And then you kind of put it on mothballs. Why did you do that? Anyway, it was an incredible, incredible ending to that game. Will Brinson, senior NFL writer, CBSSports.com, Pick Six Podcast moderator, or we could call that the Matthew Stafford Podcast. Oh, I apologize for that. I wrote that joke down and I wanted to keep it. All right, Will, let's talk about Cam, and I will simply start by asking this question. I mean, this season's a wrap, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's over, man. I mean, it's the Panthers are terrible. Cam, you know, you get the same predictable text from the same predictable people about Cam when he struggles, and he was awful. I mean, yep. Don't get me wrong. You know, he was bad, and you know, everybody who doesn't like Cam is out there peacocking in the streets, like, Cam's back. Like, we get it. You don't like Cam. I think there are bigger problems. You know, it's not about Cam, and it would be unfair to make it. I mean, you know, it's unfair to make it about Cam because Sam Darnold, if he plays in that game, they lose 51-3, right? I mean, the offensive line is bad. The defense played poorly. Don't get me wrong. Cam was horrible. I'm not trying to, cape up and apologize for Cam and be a Cam apologist, even if I am that sometimes. The Panthers were just abysmal on the road. I mean, they looked like a team that was like 7-2 and went to Miami to play a bad Dolphins team and went out and partied all weekend in South Beach and then showed up completely lethargic in that game. I mean, it was, you know, Brian Burns just screaming at everybody on the sidelines. It was just an ugly scene. And you know, Tua playing well, Miami kind of getting it together on defense, only giving up like 12 points per game the last 4 weeks in this winning streak they're on. And, you know, Carolina ran into an opponent that clearly just had way more interest in that football game than they did.
Will Brinson, senior NFL writer, CBSSports.com, is joining us. You know, my feeling on this is what – I just wonder if Matt Rhule and Joe Brady watched tape from Washington and recognized, all right, this is what we can do with our personnel right now. And it isn't drop back and throw it, even if you're throwing it short on first down. Like, they have to be, at worst, a 60-40 run-pass split. And that first of all, he almost got DJ Moore killed on third down, Cam did. The yep. pass, it just, he threw him into trouble. I don't even think the interceptions were egregious. They were not good, but Cam had far worse throws than the interceptions. But I just didn't understand the game plan. I also don't understand why, when you get inside the five, why it's a good idea to direct snap to Christian McCaffrey when you can direct snap to a better power runner named Cam Newton.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. This comes back to the larger questions about the Panthers. I mean, everyone's sort of giving Joe Brady a free pass, and I don't think anybody's giving Matt Rhule a free pass, but he's just widely assumed he's going to be there for a while. Is he a good NFL coach? I mean, can we know this early? As I pointed out before, Cliff Kingsbury certainly improved his in-game coaching performances, you know, this year versus the previous 2 years after adjusting from college.
Right.
I think if you're a Panthers fan, you have to have larger questions about the future of the franchise. And you don't mean to go week to week and oscillate wildly. Like last week, I guess Cam comes back, they beat the Cardinals. It's like, well, they might go to the playoffs. Maybe the problem is that the defense played like similar to previous years, right? With Rhule, where the defense played too well too early. They won games early, and so while ultimately the Panthers might finish about around 500-ish, mm-hmm. and might be the team that we sort of thought that they would be, the way that they got there is going to lead us to question the longer term viability of this sort of setup they've got right now.
My feeling is that the Panthers are like the guys in helmets. I'm not saying it's not a problem, and clearly they have some great players that you want to keep and be part of the culture and the future. This is not about like the Jeremy Chins, Brian Burns of the world. It's not about them. I think the Panthers' bigger problems are guys who are not wearing helmets. And I think it starts with David Tepper, who's an impatient owner, obviously. Mm-hmm. I am not saying that Matt Rhule can't be a good NFL head coach. I am willing to be patient with Matt Rhule, but I haven't seen any signs that he's a good NFL head coach. None. Whether it's clock management, wasting timeouts, decision making, you know, whatever it is, I haven't seen those signs. Same thing with Joe Brady. And again, on the first play that they ran, baffled me. Even though it was just a little quick pass to DJ Moore that he probably should have caught, wasn't a great throw. But I just don't understand why, when you have the personnel you have, why you don't A, shorten the game, and B, utilize Newton and McCaffrey to their fullest by really creating an offense that highlights the run game first and everything else second, but they apparently don't want to do that.
Yeah, it's I mean, you know, the defense has played so well at times that you sort of think, all right, this coaching staff in the front office, they know what they're doing, they know what they're putting together. And, you know, we just have to wait and be patient on the offense. But, I mean, you know, you have McCaffrey. You have – I get you have no offensive line. There's enough weapons on there where there's really no excuse for the offensive game plan to be questionable. If, as we are led to believe, the coaching staff is as talented as we're led to believe, right? I mean, like, that's the thing. And so if this staff is not – capable of maximizing the talent that they have on offense, and you have an owner who's willing to veer in wild directions when his team struggles, like trade for Deshaun, like trade everything for Deshaun Watson, like that would fix it. I mean, you know, Deshaun Watson, when he's on the field, it's been a long time since we've seen him on the field. When he's on the field, he's a great player. I mean, I'm not 100% sure Deshaun Watson with that plan and that offensive line and the defense playing the way it played yesterday wins that game. I mean, you know, he'd be under siege too. You know, it's probably closer, but I think, you know, you have to question the larger plan of everybody involved right now.
Yeah. I mean, they're in a rebuild still, but that doesn't mean that I hated the moves that they've made this year, because making the playoffs, I've always felt, was also important, even in the midst of a rebuild. I mean, you need to play playoff games. Guys who are going to be part of your future. I mean, if you can get Brian Burns, Jeremy Chinn, Shaq Thompson in a playoff games now, then you should do it, without going bananas. And I don't think they've gone bananas. But ultimately, where this team is paying the price for the fact that they refused to address the offensive line in the offseason. Yep. And, you know, all the other, and the fact that there is a learning curve, unfortunately, for Rhule and Brady and David Tepper off the field. So they're going to have to deal with that. But,
well, and, you know, I mean, just very quickly on the rebuild thing too, like, the Dolphins are a good example of this. And I realize that, watching the game yesterday is not going to necessarily back up my point here, but the Dolphins won 10 games last year in the middle of a kind of a rebuild.
Yes.
You know, they stepped out and actually won 10 games and almost made the playoffs. They've been impatient as well. You know, they traded back up. They got a bunch of first round picks to move down so the 49ers could get Trey Lance. And then they made the mistake of trading up to get, you know, they were like, we're this close to being good. We can give away our first round pick and trade up to get Jalen Waddle, who was awesome yesterday. And it looks like an awesome receiver, but you know, you're talking about a future first round pick that you gave up and sacrificed. And so I think the point is that a lot of times these NFL teams get over their skis in terms of thinking they're closer than they are. Like, David Tepper wanted to trade for Watson. He wanted to trade for Stafford. You know, all these guys, like, that wasn't going to solve everything. You know, you have bigger fundamental problems on your roster, and those problems are going to keep you from winning football games in the near term, and you need to be more patient about it and approach this as a true rebuild.
Yo, VIP. Let's kick it. Ice, ice, baby. Ice, ice, baby. All right, stop. Collaborate and listen. Ice is back with the brand new invention.
It's the Adam Gold Show. I am Adam Gold. Alec, before we bring in Jordan Cornette, I just want to make sure that this is not on Rolling Stone's top 500 songs of all time.
I mean, we don't know that yet. It is definitely not the next song on the list.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure.
I bet it's on there.
Gosh, I hope not. Jordan Cornette, ACC Network, joining us on the Adam Gold Show. What's going on, my friend?
I refuse to come on the show unless Ice Ice Baby is playing for me. I'm full on leaning into it now, AG. Like, I respect that that's my entrance music.
You missed Whitney Houston, though.
Oh, I missed the Whitney. No, I didn't catch the Whitney.
Yeah, she was the last return. We're playing Rolling Stones' top 500 songs of all time in reverse order. Number 231 was "I Want to Dance with Somebody." So
it's that low.
Yeah, I can't believe there are 230 songs better than that.
Prove it.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. That's why we have Jordan Cornette on the show. All right, look, there's so many things I want to talk about. You played basketball. We'll get to football in a second. Is it okay that I fell in love again with college basketball watching Duke and Gonzaga Friday night?
College basketball, it's taken a while, but they're slowly starting to figure it out. Usually you get one, two, the Champions Classic, maybe another game that kind of wets your beak a little bit here in the throes of football. But now they're starting to overload you with them. And now you can't hide from the fact that, oh, yeah, college basketball has got some good storylines, a lot of talent. Feels like we took a year off last year in the COVID year and no fans in the place. And we've had some blockbuster games, and they've delivered for the most part. And now, for the crowd that claims Duke is overrated, seeing them at number one, I don't know too many people who could have issue with it after what went down in Vegas.
Now, they'll probably lose to Ohio State on Wednesday, but I don't care. I just don't care because, honestly, if I'd watch a replay of that 15 more times this year. It was that good a game.
Yeah, Adam, I couldn't agree with you more. Here's the thing. I hate when people say, and it's wise people. It's people whose opinion I respect a great deal. But they always say, oh, that game feels like March. This game feels like March, and it's in November. And I'm like, no, it doesn't. There's a different approach to those games in March, the finality of it, that makes guys get tighter, and it's bigger because you know this might be the last time you watch them play. This was the closest thing to that because of the crowd, because of the interest. And mind you, on the East Coast like we are, it was a later tip.
Yeah.
And most of us stayed up. I like to think most of us who are basketball fans stayed up to watch it because it delivered like March would. It had the closest thing to when people say a March vibe that you could possibly have, just because people were hanging on each basket. There was so much talent, and the game didn't fall flat like the Zags and UCLA did earlier in the week.
Yeah, it really was. It was great. It was, I felt bad for Paolo Banchero, who had to deal with cramps in the second half. But, man, Mark Williams, Wendell Moore Jr. just made play after play after play. Chet Holmgren was great in the second half once he could stay on the court after foul trouble in the first. Gonzaga's got guys, man. I look forward to the rematch in New Orleans. I'm hoping that both teams will get there. All right, to football. You guys were in the studio. Tell me, what was Mark Richt like during State Carolina, at least at the end? You guys might not have been in the studio Friday night, but I'm sure you guys talked about it. What was he like? How did he address what we saw at the end of that game?
Nobody had words. Besides, there was, truth be told, some very negative things said about not North Carolina as a program, but the things that they were doing to close out that game. And I think anybody who had a pair of eyes watching had some head-scratching things that they watched from his Carolina team. But, we all kind of said the same thing, AG, is like, isn't it kind of fitting that this is how the Tar Heels season, regular season, would come to a close? It was just disappointment at every turn. And you could point a turnover, you could personnel turnover with the roster. You could point to a defense that never delivered despite all that came back. You can point to injuries or a lot of different things, but this was a group with all those expectations that simply never delivered.
Yeah, and the weird thing about it is that their defense was kind of delivering in this game. They had a bunch of sacks.
Yeah.
They pressured Devin Leary.
Six of them.
They looked like a real – the only thing they couldn't do was stop the run, but State kind of bailed them out by not really running the ball enough. But it was – At the end of the game, like, I was critical of the decision to kick the field goal, which I thought was a low percentage play, and the way to win the game was to give it to Sam Howell, let him make it on 4th-and-3 with 2.5 left, and then just melt the rest of the clock. They chose to kick it, and just the worst thing they did was giving the ball back to State because they never saw it again.
Gee, I honestly think that they assumed going up 9 at that point was safe. If I'm remembering how everything tracks, you're talking about the field goal to put them up 9, correct?
Yep.
Yeah, and I think at that point they felt like with the way the game had been playing, I don't think they could have anticipated losing the onside kick, giving up a quick touchdown, and then those two pass interference penalties of 15. I think one was pass. Were both pass interference?
No, one was pass interference. The other was roughing the passer. I think.
Yeah, the personal foul, which could have gone either way, quite honestly.
Yep.
And that was one that Coach Rick had issue with. He didn't like the body weight call of the roughing the passer personal foul, but yet still. How do you get in that position? How do you get in that position?
Yeah, like, I wasn't sure that they remembered, like, the defense, you're allowed. The receiving team, you're allowed to touch the ball before 10 yards. And it looked like Morrison wasn't sure, because I don't know how the ball got past him. It looked like it went through him.
It looked like he didn't think he could touch it.
Right.
And then it let it go through and then ultimately be recovered by the kicker. It was a meltdown at every turn.
It was. I mean, you let the kicker. Gosh. Kickers, college kickers, they do it to you.
You know what else? In the throes of it all, Devin Leary, who's meant so much to that program, Emeka Emezi for his career that's meant so much to that program, delivering on one of the biggest moments with his touchdown catch to put him in position. I mean, it was really cool to see a group that's unheralded, to be honest,
yep.
what they've achieved, have the spotlight on them in a game in a night where a slot where there weren't a lot of games being played, and everybody came to the close of that one. I did like that for this NC State team, who's been in the shadow, it feels like, of UNC the last few years, despite what they've been achieving.
Yeah, look, I'm glad you brought up Devin Leary. I thought he played great. And NC State, I know Dave Doran had said after the game, they're down 7 starters on defense. They had the flu and all of that. So there were a lot of things that worked against them. Good for them. They hadn't. This had been a game that they had lost in the past. They had to win it. They won it, and... if I'm going to take anything from it, it's that you're familiar with NC State stuff, that myth.
Very well.
Well, this is proof that it's gone. If it ever existed, this is proof that it's gone, because there was no way they should have won that game.
Yeah, and the only thing that maybe you could point to yet still is they go through all that, and then Wake Forest goes and wins that weekend, but yet still. I do agree with you, AG, for the fact that they were able to, it's still their rival. It still, I believe, gets them to that 10th win. And this is a group that can still hang their hat on a pretty good year.
Oh, they had a great year. And look, wherever they go in for a bowl game, I hope they go and win it. I do think that you will not see very many, if any, opt-outs for the Wolfpack. I think that's a group. And I'm not advocating or for or against opt-outs. You do what you want to do. You make a business decision when it comes to football. We're seeing Christian McCaffrey get a hard time from some people down here because they put him on IR today, and they're bringing up the opt-out from the bowl game when he was at Stanford back in the day. I mean, make a business decision when it comes to finances and football. You were smart enough to play basketball.
Yeah, I didn't mess with the cold. I didn't mess with the violence. I didn't do any of that. I just stayed indoors. We knew what the weather was going to be when the ball tipped. And all we had to worry about was ankles, knees, and backs. But I'll say this too, AG, about the pack. It'll be interesting to see who all returns from that group. I do believe Isaiah Moore said he was coming back.
Wow.
Peyton may come back. This is a group that could be, you know, propped up for next season as well. I mean, they'll lose a couple guys naturally. But a defense that showed through the face of adversity and injury still performed at a high level. Some of those pieces come back. Watch out.
Yeah, look, I've been talking about Dave Doran's program for a while. I know it hasn't had the meteoric rise. It hasn't had the splash win. They got the win over Clemson this year, but it wasn't the right year to have that win over Clemson. But they just keep improving slowly and steadily. They just keep improving. I think the program is really good. So how do we forecast? How do we talk about Wake and Pitt in the ACC championship game, and when do you guys get to Charlotte?
So we're going to get down there. Some of us Thursday night. Some of us have other prior work obligations that don't get us down there until Friday morning, the latter being me and maybe a few of the other guys. But we're sending all hands on deck. It'll be some of your favorite people, men and women with the ACC Network that have covered the league this year. We'll be down there as a celebration of a job well done. And I thought we did a pretty solid job giving people the storylines and covering these incredible athletes. And it's the payoff this weekend, so it'll be fun to be around guys and gals who I was sharing from studio out to site who were on site calling these games for us to all come together and crown a champion. And for two offenses in Wake and Pitt that are lighting up a scoreboard. I mean, what's the over under this one you're looking at? I mean, take a look. It's going to be the 80s.
It's going to be close. I think the number 3 and 4 scoring offenses in the country.
Both these teams are putting up over 42 a game. Like, come on. So you're going to see two elite quarterbacks, great playmakers on the outside. Everyone wants to talk about Wake's depth at the wideout position, but how about the Biletnikoff nominee in Jordan Addison and all those other weapons they have? Kroll at the tight end position. Jared Wayne has emerged as one of those guys. I give the nod defensively, I think everybody would, to Pitt in this one, but these are two very similar teams in how they slice it. The fact that Pitt has a better defense and applies more pressure could be the differentiator, but this could come down to whoever has the ball in the end type of game. I expect a lot of fireworks. I expect it. Look, it doesn't have CFP implications, but it doesn't mean it can't be an exciting watch, and that's what I anticipate.
All right, final thing for Jordan Cornette, and at some point we have to get Shea involved in these conversations.
No doubt.
All right, so we have to do that. You said no college football playoff implications, but we still have a college football playoff coming up. If you had to give me your four right now, who would it be?
Wow, this is fun because, AG, I'm telling you, I think this can be the most interesting weekend with implications for a CFP that maybe we've ever seen. I think that very well the five teams in contention, because Notre Dame's not playing a conference championship game.
Right.
I know that's to no surprise of anybody, but that removes them out of this. I think you have a chance that all five teams could potentially lose. Now, obviously, two of them are playing each other in Alabama and Georgia. I'm not quite certain who wins, but I'll go ahead and say Georgia wins. So Georgia stays at one. I envision Michigan, despite the fact that they just played their Super Bowl in Ann Arbor beating Ohio State. Luckily, the opponent's a lesser one. So I'll give you Michigan over Iowa. Michigan is 2. I could see Cincinnati losing to Houston. I truly could. But because I'm a believer in Fickell and the game plan, the discipline of that group, UC gets in at 3. I have then you have Alabama losing, so they're out. Oklahoma State losing to Baylor, they're out. And guess who gets in from the 6th slot, most likely, you'll see on Tuesday, jumping into 4 is Notre Dame. So I think that's going to be your 4 teams.
Wow. All right.
Well, I really do. And it's no homer. I don't think Notre Dame is a team that feels like one of the top 4 teams. But I'll also say this. Georgia, when you look at their schedule and whom they've beaten, you could argue Clemson is the best team they beat in week 1, and they didn't score an offensive touchdown. I know what that Georgia defense is. I know how dominant it's been. But everyone's crowning Georgia a little too early, in my opinion.
I think you're 100% right on Georgia's schedule. I am looking forward to that. I understand that Alabama probably should have just lost to Auburn. But I believe that if Alabama-Georgia is a close game, that Alabama will make the playoff anyway.
And they should, in my opinion, they should over a Notre Dame if Oklahoma State loses too. I want to be clear there. I'm not homering this thing and say put Notre Dame in, knowing what their history in the CFP has been. I wouldn't necessarily mind it. I know a lot of people would be up in arms at the 2-loss Bama team. But if that plays really tight and Oklahoma State does lose and you're just looking at 5, 6, 7 and go, well, who else do you put in? Then I'd be okay with it. But I'll tell you right now, AG, all of those teams could lose. Alabama could lose. Georgia could lose to Alabama. Cincinnati could lose to Houston. Baylor could upend Oklahoma State. Baylor could find themselves in this thing. I just think every one of the teams you're looking at has potential to fall flat at the most important time, which could create the biggest chaos we've seen with the playoff thus far.
Jordan Cornette, host of, along with his lovely wife, Shay, Sports Nation on ESPN+. I appreciate your time, Jordan. We'll see you in Charlotte, although we're not going down, but we'll be watching you in Charlotte, and we'll talk to you very soon.
Keep on down, man. You'll find me in a lobby having a couple pops Friday night.
All right, man. Good luck. I appreciate it. Have fun.
Thanks for having me, buddy.
You've been listening to the best of the Adam Gold Show podcast, part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network, brought to you by Capital Financial Advisory Group. Get your total retirement income plan by texting Adam to 21000. Don't forget, this podcast drops every weekday at 3 p.m. Or you can find it at WRALSportsFan.com, the WRAL Sports Fan app, or you can subscribe for free at the iTunes and Google Play stores.